Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Vado in fiamme in Pollicana, dalla rocca di Macuto, fil di sposo a fil di spada, scorre sangue a me.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Now, look, I don't have a whole lot of time to be out on Facebook, but yesterday I was troubled by a Facebook status update that the baritone Thomas Hampson posted. Let me read it to you. By 11 a.m., I murdered a king. A little while later, I was crowned king, had a friend killed, saw ghosts, drove my wife into madness and death, and finally got stabbed. And you thought you hated Mondays. Luckily, it all happened in a dress rehearsal for Verdi's Macbeth at the Metropolitan Opera. Thomas Hampson is singing the title role there, starting this Thursday evening, and joins me here in the studio now. Thomas, welcome back to Soundcheck.
How are you? Yes, good. Everybody's dead. I'm off today.
So, that Facebook status pretty much summed it up. Macbeth is, in any form, a really dramatic story. Is that what attracted you to it?
Well, look, it's one of the great operas. It's one of the great stories. It's one of the great dilemmas of ambition and evil. And what I think is sort of the key for Macbeth in terms of all those evil and abject stories of evil that you play in the opera or as a baritone. The thing about that is so compelling about Macbeth is this idea of decision. You know, he's tragic because he decides. Whatever his weakness is or his ambition is, it is premeditated in a much more maybe even realizable sense than, say, Iago, which seems to be a sort of a realization of that dark, evil side of human nature.
So there's a suggestion that Macbeth has the possibility of something. He could make other choices and not be such a schmuck.
Well, in fact, that's, I think, is this rather enigmatic aria at the end in the fourth act when he says, you know, pity and respect and love could have been mine. It's what the end of a life should bring, the embracing of your fullness of life. And in fact, I've abrogated that. In fact, probably even more to the point of the decision of Macbeth, it's that the family Macbeth, these two terribly derailed human species, abrogate nature. They kill nature. I mean, obviously, murder is the killing of the natural progression, but it's in a succession of life. It's children. It's life. It's their community. It's the succession of their kingdom. You know, it's a willful abrogation of the way life should go forward.
So when Macbeth sings this aria at the end, you know,
right,
pity, respect, love, are we supposed to pity him? Should there be some feeling of, God, I wish he had been a nicer guy?
I wonder. I'm not sure. I think what I hope, and I think what makes Macbeth so compelling, both in the theater and on the opera stage, is that it's one of those very dramatic and complex stories that we actually can truly identify with. We can see, there for the grace of life go I.
Mm.
And I think maybe that aria has that impact.
We're speaking with the baritone Thomas Hampson, and he's been talking about this particular aria, Pietà, Rispetto, Amore, here sung with the orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Thomas Hampson singing Pietà, Rispetto, Amore from Giuseppe Verdi's opera Macbeth. I know he's a bad guy, Thomas, but how do you hate someone who sings like that?
Yes, but this is the genius of Verdi, and this is what I just adore about anything I do in the repertoire of Verdi. Verdi has this and you know, it sounds so trite to say amazing ability. I don't know how anywhere else to say it. It just, to me, when I hear these characters, I hear the psychology. When I hear Leonora in the third act or fourth act of Trovatore, I hear her heart. You know, I hear Germont. I hear his pain. I hear his ambivalence. Whatever it is, it's just extraordinary to me how Verdi is able to capture in musical language, and that's perhaps a very powerful thing to remind people, that it is a language. Music is a language. And in my humble opinion, the opera art form is a musical art form in a theatrical context. The power of our assimilation of what happens to us in a three-hour period is certainly equally in the power of the language of music, if not predominant. And I say it's predominant because every breath I take on the stage is by Mr. Verdi. Mm-hmm. It is not by Mr. Shakespeare. It's not by anybody else.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. You started by saying Macbeth is a great story, but Macbeth in the Verdi opera is not necessarily the same story as Macbeth in the original Shakespeare.
John, huge point. And that was, even when you introduced, you know, he's singing Shakespeare's Verdi's Macbeth and so on. There is no opera, regardless of it being based on a very, very famous and complete in and of itself play, that is a musical setting of the play. It would be a disservice to both Verdi and Shakespeare. It would also be completely disorienting to have people coming to the opera saying, oh, well, we're going to hear the play. And oh, good, it's set to music. That's not the point. The stuff of the story and the to me, the compelling part is, and even Hamlet, which is a dicey last 45 minutes of an opera. It doesn't really work out, but it's a great opera. Verdi loved it from Amboise Thomas. But the point is, what these composers do with their librettos to accentuate or condense or pick out the salient thrust of what that dilemma is, it's in the play, and turn that into an opera, I think is very powerful and very compelling.
So how different is the story in the opera from the original play?
Well, there's a lot less words.
And they're in Italian.
And the Italian is different words. It's not an Italian translation of Shakespeare. It's a libretto based on. I think that the cast of characters is obviously reduced. The by nature, when you have an operatic form of a great play, the storyline is going to be condensed. You're going to get through a different evolving of the characters because, one, of the language of music, and two, the convention of time in the theater. And it's a different convention.
So this is something that it seems like Verdi tried early on, and then it seems almost as if, looking at his career, he said, wow, all right, Shakespeare, I'm going to need to come back to this later. And he does. His last two operas are Falstaff and Othello. But this was an early opera by him.
This is another part of the story. You know, it was interesting. I did this production in Chicago last year, and I went right from Chicago back to Zurich and did I Masdanieri. And we all sort of, you know, you look at the chronology of Verdi's operas, and you see that Masdanieri comes after Macbeth. And you think, well, how in the heck is that possible? You know, because it's just not anywhere musically as developed as Macbeth. And it turns out that Macbeth was written second. Masdanieri was done first, but Macbeth was premiered first. And you can hear that makes a lot of sense when you look at Francesco's Sonnambula scene in the last part of I Masdanieri, because this is obviously a theatrical language that Verdi is coming to in 1847, 1848. And it is a true tectonic shift in musical, theatrical language and structure for opera. And it's an astounding piece of music. And what I find very compelling are the pieces that Verdi went on and kept writing, and we have the Rigolettos, and we have the Fortas, and we have the Trovatores, and then he starts heading in the direction of the Don Carlo, and then he comes back and revisits a couple of those middle pieces or pieces that we're introducing, like Van Masdanieri or like Boccanegra. In the meantime, he's done French versions of these other operas, so this tool chest is getting very, very rich, and I don't know of any revisit by Verdi of his pieces that they aren't compellingly better.
Did he revisit Macbeth?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, what you were playing, the Ove Sonio, the aria, is actually the original 1847 version. It became then a duet of rather pithy, dramatic edginess in the third act, in the later version.
So when you begin playing Macbeth on stage at the Met this Thursday, it'll be the later.
Practically, you only ever hear the revised versions.
Thomas Hampson sings the title role in Macbeth by Giuseppe Verdi this Thursday, March 15th, until Monday, April 9th. And you can find a link to performance dates and times on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. You know, in the theater, there's all of these famous superstitions about Macbeth. You know, you can't say
not
the
just
name.
Macbeth.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, in the case of Macbeth, you can't say the name. Mm. You can't quote any lines from it inside the theater itself. Are any of those superstitions in play in the opera world?
I think they used to be. In fact, other superstitions as well. We've gotten terribly boring in modern times. you still meet some of the old guard who you'll say, "Oh yes, I'm doing Macbeth," and they kind of, their eyes widen, and like you've just said, you know, "I shot my mother and dragged her behind the truck," or something.
Or it's like, you know, you've said, "Hey, you're in the middle of pitching a no-hitter."
Yeah,
you know, in the dugout.
You know, or "Hey, two more strokes and you've got a 59 or something, you know, whatever. Exactly. It's like that. But it's, we don't carry these two things too much on hard on sleeve.
In addition to the Italian repertoire, the German repertoire that you've sung so well for so long, you're also known, Thomas, for performing American songs, both from the Great American Songbook and from the perhaps lesser-known American art song tradition.
Well, I appreciate that, and there is a difference. The American Songbook has pretty much fallen into our development of the notion of popular music. My bailiwick, if you will, if that's a word we even use anymore, is my passion is poetry that is set to music, where you really have a strong dialogue of two metaphorical worlds, if you will, the metaphor of word and the metaphor of sound. And I've always been amused by this struggle with people of, you know, is it first the word and then the music, or the music and the word? And so that's probably a question, or even an answer to a question, that doesn't need to be asked. The brilliance of art song, or classic song, as we are coming more to talk about it, is literally a unique art form of song that is born of two independent art forms of themselves. And I think that's a richer way to look at it, because it invites us into different layers of memory, collective or even subconscious.
So no matter how well Rodgers and Hammerstein worked together, it's a different animal than, say, Schubert and Goethe, where the poetry pre-exists and then the musician comes along and sets it.
Yes, and it's not by any means pejorative. It's not by any means
different.
Qualitative. It is the difference between lyrics or texts or show music. Compelling storytelling, although storytelling is obviously in classic song as well. You don't even have to go to Schubert and Goethe. Let's look at Ned Rorem and Walt Whitman. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a perfectly contemporary discussion of what this is about. And what I have found so overwhelming in this whole new look at American culture, this history of American culture through the eyes of our poets and the ears of our composers, is that we open a unbelievably rich landscape of creativity in the very complex thing we call American culture. And we, I think, give our creative personalities more credit for what they were trying to do, and that is to tell the story of being in or of America.
Well, and appropriately, last month when you were at the groundbreaking ceremony for the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture down in D.C., Thomas Hampson actually sang an American art song by the African American composer William Grant Still.
Morning angel, with heartstrings wailing, for one who in death's all stars. Morning angel, silence your wailing, and raise your head from your hands. is training the white dove promise
stands. That is my guest, Thomas Hampson, singing live at the groundbreaking ceremony for the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. That was last month, February 22nd. And Thomas Hampson sings the title role in the Metropolitan Opera production of Macbeth from this Thursday, March 15th, until Monday, April 9th. A link to performance dates and times is on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And Thomas, you know, there's a lot more where that came from in terms of William Grant Still.
Oh, my goodness, what a great composer.
So maybe more from you down
the road? Absolutely, absolutely. One of my favorite composers. Well, and I must say, I want to say that whole celebration, that whole opening, the ceremonies, who spoke and how they spoke, it was just a wonderful, wonderful morning.
Well, and you were saying before how, you know, differentiating between the Great American Songbook and classic or art song doesn't mean one is better than the other. And as if to prove the point, in the background, here's Thomas Hampson singing a Cole Porter tune, Two Little Babes in the Wood. Thomas, great to have you back with
us
on Soundcheck.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Tired businessman to see.
Thomas Hampson, he will be honored by the Met Opera Guild at a Master Singers discussion and performance on Thursday, March 22nd at the K Playhouse. And that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. For the rest of the week, the jazz bassist Christian McBride will be guest hosting Soundcheck. Tomorrow, he'll be joined by NBA great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to talk about the new documentary On the Shoulders of Giants, which tells the story of the Harlem Wrens, an all-black basketball team based in New York during the Harlem Renaissance. And Christian McBride talks to one of his own musical icons when Allman Brothers bassist Oteil Burbridge stops by. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer, and we had help today from Chris Nolan. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.
Too many boats, they have found that the fountain of youth is a mix.